Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 18, Text Number 49. Iti putra krita gena. Iti putra krita gena. Sonu tapto mahamuni. Sonu tapto mahamuni. Swayam viprakrito ragya. Swayam viprakrito ragya. Naiva gam tad achintayat. Naiva gam tad achintayat. Iti putra kritagena. Sonu tapto mahamuni. Swayam viprakrito ragya. Naiva gam tad achintayat. Vaishnavis. Iti, thus, putra, son, krita, done by, agena, by the sin, sa, he, the muni, anutapta, regretting, Mahamuni, the sage. Swayam, personally. Viprakrita, being so insulted. Ragya, by the king. Na, not. Eva, certainly. Agam, the sin. Tat, that. Achintayat, thought of it. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. The sage thus regretted the sin committed by his own son. He did not take the insult paid by the king very seriously. Purport. The whole incident is now cleared up. Maharaj Parikit's garlanding the sage with a dead snake was not at all a very serious offense, but Sringi's cursing the king was a serious offense. The serious offense was committed by a foolish child only, therefore he deserved to be pardoned by the Supreme Lord, although it was not possible to get free from the sinful reaction. Maharaj Parikit also did not mind the curse offered to him by a foolish brahmana. On the contrary, he took full advantage of the awkward situation, and by the great will of the Lord, Maharaj Parikit achieved the highest perfection of life through the grace of Srila Sukadeva Goswami. Actually, it was the desire of the Lord, and Maharaj Parikit, Rishi Samika, and his son Sringi were all instrumental in fulfilling the desire of the Lord. So none of them were put into difficulty, because everything was done in relation with the Supreme Lord. Om Ganatim Ananda Shah Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshurudan Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurudeva Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayamupakadamayam Dadati Swaparantikam. So here in the last sentence, Prabhupada says, none of them were put into difficulty because everything was done in relation with the Supreme Person. So how can we understand that sentence? Because it seems like certainly, at least Maharaj Parikit seems like he's being put into difficulty. He's going to lose his body. He's going to lose his life. I mean, that ordinarily somebody would think that's difficult. You know, that's being put into a difficulty. You're going to have to give up your life. So that's him. We're going to get back to him. And then there's, okay, Samika Rishi, we can understand now he's not put in any, he hasn't been put into any difficulty because he was like the innocent, most innocent party in the whole thing of the triad there. You know, he just was a sage in meditation. He really was meditating. He wasn't faking it. He actually was meditating. And he got grounded by the dead snake. He didn't, when he came back to external consciousness, it wasn't him who cursed Maharaj Parikit. You know, he just was informed by his son that his son had cursed Maharaj Parikit. He regretted it. He didn't say, good, you know, I'm glad you did that, you know. No. He responded everything in the correct way. He absolutely was faultless in the whole situation. So, and he's not put into any difficulty, you know. Sringi, he was the one who made the big mistake. You know, he overreacted. It's understandable how he could have become upset because, you know, trying to see things from his perspective. He comes, you know, he finds out from his friends that his father, who he loves, you know, was garlanded by a dead snake by the king. So, you know, you can understand how he would take that as an insult. He's them's fighting words, you know, he's insulted our family, right? And, but he was old enough and should have taken into consideration the extraordinary circumstances, which is that it was the king who did it, the emperor, and not only that, he was a renowned great devotee. So he should have been able to, you know, figure that in the equation, which unfortunately he wasn't able to. So he wasn't mature in his discrimination, and he way overreacted. At least that's what we're being, you know, told here in these purports. He way overreacted, and consequently he committed a great offense. So you would think that he's going to be in some difficulty. But here in this purport, Prabhupada says, the serious offense was committed by a foolish child only, therefore he deserved to be pardoned by the Supreme Lord, although it was not possible to get free from the sinful reaction. Now, what does that mean? Let's look at that sense. What does it mean? I mean, nothing's impossible for Krishna, so how is it not possible for Sringi to get free from the sinful reaction? Well, a clue to that is given in the previous purport, where Prabhupada says, Rishi Samika also knew that the Lord does not forgive a person who has committed an offense at the feet of a devotee. The Lord can only give direction to take shelter of the devotee. So, once again, Krishna can do anything. So it's not like he couldn't forgive Sringi if he really, really wanted to. But Krishna is a person. You know, and just like in one purport in the first canto, the Bhagavatam says, Prabhupada says, our psychology is a reflection of Krishna's psychology. So Krishna can have, you know, preferences and policies. So it's a policy of Krishna. This is Krishna's policy, that if somebody commits an offense at the lotus feet of a devotee, he doesn't forgive him. But they have to take shelter at the feet of that devotee. So that's the best I could do in understanding this other statement of Prabhupada, that he deserved to be pardoned by the Supreme Lord, although it was not possible to get free from the sinful reaction. It wasn't possible because that means Krishna would be going against his own policy. Right, which, you know. Anyway, so Sringi was really not going to be in difficulty because basically, from what I can see, was pardoned. But how about Maharaj Prickett? Maharaj Prickett, he's going to lose his body. So how is he not being put into difficulty? Well, he's not being put into difficulty because he is able, as Prabhupada's making this statement, he's able to understand the whole thing from the spiritual perspective. Maharaj Prickett is not thinking that, oh, woe is me. Here I am, the king. I'm a young man, and I'm enjoying life, and now this has happened to me, and it's all over, you know? No. He's understanding it from the spiritual perspective. He knows that, yeah, I'm spirit soul, and I'm eternal servant of Krishna. This has happened. It's Krishna's will. Somehow this is an arrangement of Krishna. He could, you know, see beyond the immediate situation, and he can understand that, well, Krishna is just accelerating my going back to Godhead. That's how he's taking it. And he's right, you see? He's right. So in his case, there is no difficulty because of his advanced spiritual consciousness and his spiritual vision, there's no difficulty, right? So, it's all good. Sometimes you hear that expression. I hear it on Sankirtan. When people are refusing me, as they're walking by, they say, it's all good. And actually, they're right. But they don't know what they're talking about. It is all good. Huh? No, it's not all good for them. But I'll explain. On the big picture, it is all good. Okay? In this sense. It's all good in that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's in the spiritual world. His body is Sat Chit Ananda. Okay? He's there on Goloka Vrindavan, and he's there in his expanded form of Lord Narayan on many Vaikuntha planets. On those spiritual planets, there is reciprocal loving relationships going on between Krishna and his devotees, persons, who are eternal spiritual persons. And they have spiritual bodies, eternal spiritual bodies, just like Krishna. And they're engaging. They're loving Krishna as friends in Goloka Vrindavan, as a friend, as a parent, as a conjugal lover. And Krishna's loving them back. And in the other Vaikuntha planets, they're loving Krishna as a friend, but more like in a formal type of friendship than, you know, very intimate friendship, and as servant. And Krishna's loving them back as friend and master. So it's all good in the spiritual world. That's a no-brainer, understanding how the spiritual world is all good. But then somebody might say, wait a second, hang on. What about the material world? You can't tell me this place is all good. Well, it's a matter of perspective. See, it's a matter of perspective. This material world seems like not all good because there's suffering here, okay? There's suffering. There's old age, there's disease, there's death, there's adiatmic miseries, adibhotic miseries, adidaivic miseries, you know, miseries of your own mind and body, miseries inflicted upon us by other living entities, miseries of natural disasters. And, so how could somebody say that the material world is all good? And some of these things seem like they're happening with a very, and they, on one level, they are happening with a very malicious intent behind them. You see, like when somebody commits a murder, you know, not only is it he's inflicting suffering upon that person or death, which is worse than that, but he's doing it with a malicious intent. So therefore, throughout history, philosophers have a very difficult time with this one particular problem. It's called the problem of evil. You see, and it's one of the biggest philosophical stumbling blocks for people to accept that there's a God. A lot of people, you know, get stuck on this one, and they become atheists as a result. It goes something like this. This is a simple syllogism, you know. There's evil in the world. Okay, everybody will agree with that, generally speaking, out there. There's evil in the world, okay? And if there was a God who was all-powerful, all-knowing, and all-benevolent, there couldn't be evil. How could there be evil, right? Therefore, the third line is, therefore, there's not a God of that description, see? That's the syllogism. But I had, an insight onto that in preparing this class. Actually, it depends how you define evil. Okay, and it depends on what level you're perceiving things, and I'll explain. Okay, this is how I define evil. I define evil as an act performed with a conscious, malicious intent. That's evil, which is different from, say, you know, somebody gets hit by a bolt of lightning or something like that. That's horrible. That's tragic. That's a disaster. But you can't say that the lightning bolt is evil, because it's just, you know, it's forces of nature. Okay, so evil is that. Okay. Now, here in the material world, things happen, and generally the people that are on the receiving end of a lot of the undesirable things that happen, they perceive those things as evil, and quite rightly so. You know, if you're getting raped or murdered or attacked or something like that, you could think that, well, obviously, how could you say there's no evil in the world? Look what's happening. And being done with a malicious, conscious, malicious intent. And that's true on a certain level. But if you take it to a higher level, there is no evil. And I'll explain that. The underlying background of this whole cosmic manifestation is not evil. In other words, Krishna is behind the arrangement of this material world. In other words, we'll go back a couple steps. Let's go back to the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, you have Krishna and Narayan, and you have innumerable parisads, you know, eternal associates, okay? And they're engaging in their devotional service to Krishna. So if one of them or some of them decide that they don't want to be engaged in Krishna's service anymore, what's Krishna supposed to do? No, they're not slaves. You know, the eternal associates of Krishna in the spiritual world, they're not slaves, they're not robots, they're not spiritual infants. They're mature spiritual personalities. So Krishna's got a situation where he's got mature spiritual personalities, and they don't want to serve him anymore for some reason. Not a good one, obviously, not a good one. And so Krishna's got to do something about that. Okay? Does he snuff them out of existence? No. That's not, you know, they're eternal. They're part and parcel. That's not, you know, you don't. It's like he won't do that. So Krishna has to come up with a way in which to deal with that. You see? So he did. And that's the material world. So the background, Krishna's not thinking when a living entity or a devotee in the spiritual world messes up and has to come to the material world, Krishna's not thinking, okay, now here's my chance to get even. I'll show these. No. He's just thinking, oh, bummer, you know. He doesn't like it. He's not happy about that. See? So he creates this material universe, the whole cosmic manifestation, but there's a loving intent behind it. There's a loving intent behind the cosmic manifestation. It's Krishna's arrangement to reform, you see, not inflict evil and suffering, you know, maliciously, sadistically, on living entities that didn't want to serve him anymore. But it's Krishna's attempt, the whole cosmic manifestation is Krishna's attempt to reform, to give these living entities, us, right, an opportunity to reform ourselves, get our act together, so we can go back and be with him in the spiritual world, so we can join in. Now, I got a couple Shastric references to support this point. The first comes from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 5, Text 24 in the purport. I'm not going to read the whole thing, just a couple sentences. The Lord wanted to create the cosmic manifestation to give another chance to the conditioned souls who were dormant in forgetfulness. The cosmic manifestation, see, another chance. The cosmic manifestation gives the conditioned souls a chance to go back home, back to Godhead. And that is its main purpose. See? So there's a loving intent behind the whole thing. Yeah, there is perceived suffering and perceived even evil here in the material world. But the higher, the bigger picture, you know, if you can understand, if you're fortunate to have this knowledge and you can see, understand the bigger picture, you can see how it's all good. It's just Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-benevolent Supreme Being, trying to give his wayward parts and parcels a chance to come back to be with him in the spiritual world again. But they got to get their act together. Now, if you could think of a better way, a better arrangement, a better way that Krishna could deal with the situation of souls misusing their free will and not wanting to serve him anymore and having to be reformed, if you could think of a better arrangement, then after class this morning, go right up there in front of the altar and tell Krishna, and you know, because I'm sure he'd be glad to know about it. But I can't think of a better arrangement. I mean, this is Krishna's arrangement, okay? So, now, is it a... I'll give you an example, okay, and of kind of what I'm talking about. It's perspective. A couple of weeks ago, I was had in the situation where I was went into the Govinda's restaurant, and I was, you know, getting prasadam, and it happened to be a codicil. There was a person. He was taking prasadam, and he was, and it was not a codicil prasadam. So I said, "Prabhu, you know, that's it's a codicil today." And he goes, "Oh." Anyway, I could see this person didn't have the right attitude about the whole thing. So I chastised him, right? I said, "No, you're a nonsense." Like I got upset like that. Now this person is probably thinking like, "This guy's evil," you know, because he got chastised, right? He's on the receiving end. But I'm thinking, actually, I'm this guy's best friend, because you know, you gotta. This is like that. Following a codicil, that's not an ideal standard. That's a basic minimum requirement. Just like when you come into the temple room, you got to take off your shoes. That's not an ideal standard. That's not something that, well, I'll gradually learn how to take off my shoes when I come to the temple room over a period of time. Or I'll do it sometimes, but not other times. No. From the very first time you come to the temple, you know, you have to take off your shoes before you come into the temple room. I mean, the only exception would be if somebody was, you know, had some serious medical situation which prevented them from removing their shoes. And then we'd probably even do something like help them clean the bottom of their shoes, and we might even make an exception. But in general, you know, somebody, if they're able to, they've got to take off the shoes before they come in the temple. That's, you know, basic minimum requirement, not an ideal standard. So the point is that I'm trying to make is that it's a matter of perception. When you are on the receiving end, it's kind of, it's easy to think that, you know, that I'm the victim and it's the other person who's bad. But, I mean, in that situation, I'm not going to take a vote or anything like that, but I'm sure a lot of devotees would agree that, yeah, no, that was good. You did the right thing because actually you helped that person. Just like another example would be when a surgeon performs an operation. Sometimes, you know, he's got to take, or a doctor, he's doing something. I'll give you an example. My father was in the World War II, okay? And so he was in the South Pacific, and he developed this infection on his leg, on the right leg, above the ankle, below the knee. So they were, they told him, "We're going to have to amputate." And he said, "No way." He wouldn't sign. He wouldn't give him permission. He said, "No way." He said, and they said, "Well, then we're going to have to cut." You know, and he said, "Well, okay, then do it." He said, you know, but he was in the middle of the South Pacific. It wasn't like at a hospital or something like that. You know, they didn't have the stuff, you know, the proper medical arrangements. So they just, basically, he had to bite the bullet. You know, they gave him something. I can't remember, but didn't cover the pain. And they just were cutting, and he was, yeah. So, you know, it seems like, wow, these cruel doctors. But no, you know, he could have been thinking, these guys are horrible. But no, they did it to help him. The overall intent was to say, okay, the guy doesn't want to have his leg amputated, so we got to do this. So it's the same. So everybody, you get the idea. So Krishna is in that position. It's tough love. Krishna's, this whole material world is Krishna dishing out tough love. It's love, but we're on the receiving end of the, you know, we're the ones who are in the process of being reformed. So if we're not fortunate enough to have this philosophy, we won't be able to understand things in the proper way. But those of us who are devotees, we can understand that when things happen that, you know, seem like undesirable, it's all part of Krishna's big overall plan to reform us and bring us to the platform of pure devotional service. So getting back to this other point here, so Krishna's, the whole material world is an opportunity for us to reform ourselves so we can go back to Godhead. And somebody might ask, well, is that just Krishna's general desire, or does he have a specific plan? Actually, Prabhupada was asked this back in the very end, 1977, Prabhupada, when he was in Vrindavan in his last days, he was, they had some devotees there taking care of him and everything. And on one day, he said, actually, I want to make the whole world Krishna conscious. And they asked Prabhupada, is that just like a general desire, or do you have some specific plan? And Prabhupada said, specific plan. He wasn't talking a lot at that point. So he said, specific plan. And he said, what is that? They asked him, what is that? Prabhupada said, Vanashram, like that. That was Prabhupada's answer. So he had a specific plan. So in the same way, Krishna wants to see all, ideally Krishna wants to see all jivas in the spiritual world. He wants to see everybody participating in the... Actually, if I would have read the rest of this purport, it goes on to say that he wants to see all... He wants to awaken. Prabhupada gives the example of, like, the husband wants to awaken the wife that's sleeping so that she can enjoy with all the other wives. And then he goes on to say that Krishna wants all the living entities to have the opportunity to participate in his Rasa Leela dance, pastime, which is the perfection of devotional service. See, so that's what Krishna wants. Krishna wants us all his jivas, all his parts and parcels to be, you know, participating in the highest spiritual affairs like that. So, right, and he has a specific plan to execute that purpose, to accomplish that, to achieve that purpose. What is that plan? Well, right? That plan is the Sankirtan movement. In the teachings of Lord Chaitanya, chapter 17, Prabhupada makes the same statement. He says, the Sankirtan movement, at least certainly for now, in the day and age we're living in, says the Sankirtan movement inaugurated by Lord Chaitanya is a transcendental pastime of the Lord. Now here Prabhupada does something. He preempts, he's presenting Lord Chaitanya thinking, okay? Quote, he goes, by it I live. This is Lord Chaitanya thinking or speaking. By it I live simultaneously to preach and popularize this movement in the material world. See, so that's an excerpt from this teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So this is the plan of Lord Chaitanya. This is the plan of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya, not the same person, to make everybody Krishna, to give everybody the opportunity to help everybody become Krishna conscious. The Sankirtan movement. And Lord Chaitanya is saying, by it I live. Now, in saying by it I live, I don't think he's saying I like it. Like I might say, you know, by book distribution I live. I might be expressing that I like it. But I think Lord Chaitanya is expressing more than that here. He's expressing that it's a sense in which it's not different from him. You see? And I will support that by two other references from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the Sankirtan movement is, and what I'm going to support is that the Sankirtan movement is non-different from Lord Chaitanya, from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Chaitanya. So when you're participating in the Sankirtan movement, you are associating directly, personally, with Lord Chaitanya, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay, here's the reference. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 9th canto, 24th chapter, text 56. Says, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has inaugurated the Hare Krishna movement, which is getting even more specific, Hare Krishna movement, which is not different from Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one associates with this movement, he directly associates with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Okay? So it's non-different from Krishna, the Hare Krishna movement. And here in the Anchalila, chapter 5, text 88, Prabhupada says, the present Krishna consciousness movement is non-different from the pastimes performed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu when he was personally present. For the same principles are being followed and the same actions performed without fail. So, yeah, so this is very important. It's very significant that this is, Krishna wants every living entity, every jiva to become, to return to pure devotional service. And this is the way, the arrangement he's made to facilitate that, the Sankirtan movement, the Hare Krishna movement, to be more specific, which is not different from Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. So, we should participate in it. We should participate in the Sankirtan movement, and we should try to give it to other people. You know, that's the defining characteristic between a Kanishtha Adhikari and a Madhyama Adhikari. You know, the Kanishtha Adhikari worships the deity in the temple and can be serious about devotional service. But what the dividing line, the thing that moves you out of the Kanishtha platform and takes you onto the Majjhima platform, is that you feel concerned. You feel like, I got to do something to try to give this to other people. Then you're transitioning from Kanishtha to Majjhima. Right? There are other things too. You know, there's four different things that a Majjhima sees, but that's the driver. You know, that I got to give this to other people. Okay, so yeah, we should participate in the Sankirtan movement, and we should try to participate in the Sankirtan movement in such a way that others can benefit from our activity. And that doesn't mean changing your activity. You know, you could be a Sankirtan devotee, you could be like a book distributor and be a Kanishtha. It depends on your consciousness, see? I mean, it's a Majjhima activity, right? But if you're going out there thinking, I'm doing this because I want to become famous in the temple, or because I want to keep some of the money, or because I like talking to the women or the men, as the case may be, then, you know, that's not a Majjhima consciousness. Whereas, you know, follow what I'm saying? But you could be back here at the temple, you know, being a pujari and be in Majjhima consciousness. You could be thinking like, yeah, you know, I'm concerned about the people that come to the temple. When you're not on the altar, you know, you talk to them, you try to be friendly and cultivate them. Ayatotis, I don't know how many sets of Srimad Bhagavatams he's distributed. He's back here at the temple, see? But he's in the Majjhima consciousness. So anyway, so that's something there. And so in the purport it talks about, you know, the will, the great will of the Lord and the desire of the Lord. So I think I'm touching upon both those points in what I'm saying. It's the desire of the Lord that everybody become returned to pure devotional service. And that desire is being manifested in the Sankirtan movement. I'll just make a couple closing points here. In terms of, because I kind of got to the point where I'm talking about our role in the whole thing, and I've mentioned that we should participate, and specifically, well, one point before, I'm going to elaborate upon how we should participate, but before I do, it's really to our advantage, it's to our benefit in every which way to really try to wholeheartedly participate in the Sankirtan movement. We become purified. Other people become benefited. And not that we want this, not that this should be our prime motivation, but, you know, we become glorious. Why? Because Krishna wants that. In the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 11, text 34, in the purport, Prabhupada says, every plan is made by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but he is so kind and merciful to his devotees that he wants to give the credit to his devotees who carry out his plan according to his desire. So I remember when I was a brand new devotee, I used to hear devotees saying that, actually, the books were already distributed. We just have to go out and get the credit. You know, that was the understanding, that the movement's already spread. It's because by Lord Chaitanya's desire, in the same way, the books were already distributed, we just have to go out and get the credit. So it's a win-win-win kind of a opportunity here. You know, you make advancement, other people make advancement, and Krishna recognizes us as his dear devotees and gives us the credit for spreading the Krishna conscious movement. Of course, it's all happening by his potency. Okay, so getting back to the point of our participation, some ideas that occur to me about how we should participate. And I made like a hierarchy. I thought of four different qualities that are very important in participating in the Sankirtan movement. And I'll present them in like a sequential. I think they should be presented in this sequence. First and most important is willingness. That's the beginning. You have to have willingness. That's the first qualification. Willingness means that, you know, you hear this philosophy and you're willing to give it a go. You're willing to, you know, do some service, you know, chant or do something to help or whatever. That's the first. Second thing, when you kind of got that one going, reliability. You know, it's one thing to be willing, but then you have to be willing, and then you have to be, should be, try to cultivate the quality of reliability, which means that, you know, you could be counted on to do what it is that you say you're going to do when it's supposed to be done, and do it in an honest way, do it in a, you know, with integrity like that. That's the next quality. The third quality is competency. That's once you've, you know, kind of got those two under your belt to a certain extent, you're willing, you know, you're going to do it properly, and then you should get good at it. You should work at doing it competently because, you know, everything requires some ability, some skill. So you've got to try to work on developing the skills. And then the fourth one, is to do it with a favorable attitude. That's important, favorable attitude. And, you know, do it in such a way that you're trying to please the spiritual master, you're trying to please the devotees. And then that's it. I think when you got those four under your belt, then you're well along the way to pure devotional service. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions or comments or anything they'd like to say?
Thank you for a very well thought out class. I understood that the evil is not malicious coming from Krishna, that it's an agency of Krishna, that in the material world there's evil, and it's an agency for our rectification, that he has no evil intent in
right.
The things that happen to us. There's no, he has no malice. But we see that in the material world, human beings have amazing, like really surprising amount of malice toward each other.
Correct.
So it's sometimes it's kind of hard to divide that from Krishna. You know, that like why do we have that potential within us to have such horrific malice toward one another when Krishna doesn't have that quality at all?
Well, I tried to kind of touch upon that or talk about that during the class. When I was describing how you got pure devotees, they're not slaves, they're not robots, they're not spiritual infants, they're mature spiritual beings, and they decide not to serve Krishna, or they do something that requires that they leave the spiritual world, and this is the arrangement that Krishna's made as part of the reformation program. You know, obviously, it's all arranged, it's designed by Krishna ultimately. It's not something that happened out of his control, so this is the best Krishna was able to come up with as part of his program to reform his jivas and bring him back to the platform of pure devotional service. As I said, if you could think of something better, tell him.
That's the definition of a devotee, that he sees that the material and spiritual world, he sees the material world and he sees the spiritual world. Is that aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarva pravartite, that all of it is is Krishna's energy, and then when he understands that completely, he'll engage in devotional service with all his heart, you know. But I think we get hung up on seeing the horrible things in this world. But if we can just get past that and understand that it's really Krishna's agency for helping us to understand.
Yeah, I agree, and it's something that's, you know, worth thinking about deeply because it's a really important point. It's, as I said, it's the major stumbling block for a lot of people, and it's even something that prevents them from believing God. You know, causes them to be atheists because they don't even have the ideas to deal with it, and even basically most people don't have the ideas. If outside of Krishna consciousness, you don't really find the intellectual tools required for them to really deal with the problem of evil or in the world in an intelligent way, and without getting specific, but I'm talking about other, you know, major world religions and of course atheism or just physicalism in science, you know, the idea that we're just basically matter. They don't have what it takes to even, you know.
Like in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that the three modes of nature, these three modes of nature in this material world are my divine energy. So,
yeah,
it's interesting, but it takes, you have to really think about it, and yeah.
Right. Yeah, somebody might think, you know, Prabhupada always would give the example of the prison system. Is the government evil because they have prisons all over the country? You know, the prisoners might think so. There's probably a lot of criminals that are sitting in a jail right now thinking, like, man, this is evil. All I did was try to just steal a car. I mean, big deal, you know. And I'm sitting in this jail cell for the last 5 years. But, you know, they have their way of seeing it. But from the government's perspective, no, it's a good thing. They see it as a good thing. It's not perceived by the criminals as such, but it's perceived by the government as, this is good. This is, you know, we're dealing with these guys. We can't allow people to commit crimes. It's, what about all the law-abiding citizens? We've got to protect them. And we also, simultaneously, we're doing something to give these people a chance to reform. Hopefully, when they'll chill out. Hopefully, they'll sit in the jail cell and they'll kind of get it at some point. And when they come out, they're not going to do that again. And they'll, you know, be law-abiding citizens contributing to the overall welfare of the society.
So the horrific things that people do to each other in this world, those are a perverted reflection of Krishna's ability to have malice. Because Krishna is not without malice. Krishna has the ability to fight demons and to, you know, to become angry when there's injustice. So that's within Krishna. But when it comes out in us, it must be like
I wouldn't call
perversion.
That malice. Krishna has the ability to get angry. But it's not malice because, you know, the demons he's fighting with, they always get benefited. They get liberated, you know, like Putana got Sarupya Mukti with Vatsalya Ras. And, you know, these demons that Krishna fights with, they get liberated. So I don't call that malice.
The word malice is the wrong word, yeah.
Well, everybody's going, so it's probably a good time to stop the class. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.